brings up another point, and that's transportation, which we mentioned once before, the access, the early days, what was talked about. I've got three things to say there. Before I came, I was sent a package of materials when I was still at the University of Edinburgh. And in there was a little booklet, a small booklet, which I'm hoping to find among my residual files one of these days. Nobody else seems to remember it, but it was a booklet which talked about how they were going to have big parking lots at the bottom of the hill at Curtis and Duthie area, as well as that idea of development down there, of a town site, but big parking lots, and then express buses up the hill to come in. So I was half expecting that I would be parking at the bottom of the hill and taking a bus up the hill when I first arrived. Nothing could have been further from the truth. So that was one idea. A second idea was expressed by the first president, Patrick MacTaggart Cowan, and he had the idea, this is the Vietnam War era, mind you, of having large military-style helicopters bring students in to commute and land in the football field area. And so you could get 20, 30, 40 at a time by a helicopter. Now, whether this was serious or something that was said as a joke somewhere, I have no idea. But it was said, and I heard it more than once. And there was a third idea, and what was it? Oh, it was the idea of a funicular railway up that north slope. And there would have had to be a big parking space down there, and that would have had to be planned for. And you will hear different comments on that, because that's still a story that runs around campus with some currency, at least among the older faculty. And usually it's attributed to somebody in the finance department, Dennis, who's died now, Dennis somebody. Somebody else who was working there, whose name I'm trying to think of, took one of my courses because he was a mature student, probably 40 years of age, an Englishman, who wanted to do some further courses or a degree. And he was in my fourth year seminar in urban studies. And he wanted to write an essay on a funicular railway access to the top of Burnaby Mountain from the North Face. And did. He sent off to Austria and Switzerland and Germany for all kinds of materials that they had produced, and brought it all together in a big package and wrote a really quite interesting essay. And then that somehow got some distribution on campus. And so far as I'm concerned, that's where the idea began. It began in my seminar. It might be, however, that he picked up the idea from somebody in his office and then ran with it in my course. So I can't say he originated the idea, because I don't know. And he, too, has died now. They're all gone. But there were these three separate notions of how do you get to the top of the campus to the university in the easiest, quickest, most economical way. Well, you had a funicular railway idea, you had a helicopter idea, and you had express buses.
Well, the greenest of the green ideas was linking the funicular railway to a proper commuter line.
Yes, that's right.
On what the West Coast Express is.
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, the railway planners, like, totally nixed this. Yes. But I suppose at some future date, there might be a stop.
It may still be current, in a funny sort of sense. When Warren Gill was still alive, the vice president of the Harbor Center campus, he was an urban/transportation geographer, and he and I used to talk about this. And my idea was that when the West Coast railway was established and commuters could come in from Coquitlam on it, we should advocate getting a stop at the foot of Spurling so that students could get off at Spurling and take an express bus up the hill. And he actually took that to some meeting somewhere and told me it was quite dismissed. For those who suddenly thought, well, maybe if we took it to Willingdon, we could have buses to both BCIT and SFU. Well, that was an interesting idea, except it would be too far away from SFU access to be really meaningful, and may not have been good enough for BCIT, and the whole thing just kind of evaporated as an idea. But your point about starting with the notion of the funicular railway station and that connection, this train idea is still there.
Is it still a problem on Burnaby Mountain, getting up and down?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. I have...
More students take buses now because of the new bus ticket system for students. But,
I have seen students waiting in the morning over on the Lougheed Highway where the SkyTrain is, or down at the bottom of Curtis. There's not enough rolling stock available during rush hour times.
Our version of what's being in the news these days is the access to UBC along Broadway, should we have a light rapid transit out to UBC, which is a huge point in the daytime. There must be 50, 60, 70,000 people go out to UBC in the daytime. Mm-hmm. And it's an enormous problem.
That's one reason why I'm trying to encourage discussion of hitchhiking.
Let's get back to unbelievable taboo against hitchhiking.
Yes. Like, students... Like, I would never dream of stopping and picking up a student.
Not anymore.
No way, because you'd be liable for charges of molestation, rape, etc.
We did it routinely, but it's too easy. All that has to happen nowadays is for a student to say, "Oh, I felt uncomfortable in his presence," and you are done.
Right. When I hitchhike up the hill sometimes. The people who will pick me up are older staff members.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell me in what other ways isolation up at the top of the mountain has created problems, or maybe actually
the most wonderful evening we ever had on Burnaby Mountain was during a massive snowstorm that absolutely crippled, whether you were on a Volkswagen or on a bus. I mean, at a certain point in the evening, everything ground to a halt. And they had the daycare kids come to the what used to be called the Diamond University Club. Mm-hmm. And we spent the night at the Diamond University Club. Academics,
small children,
mentoring these children. I mean, they weren't abandoned, but they couldn't get off the mountain. That was a wonderful experience. And I remember more than one person who was there saying, gee, this is the way the community should operate.
So in some ways, SFU's isolation actually promoted this feeling of community then.
In times of weather related stress, yes.
There's a strain there, a strand of thought, of emotion, which you put your finger on with that, yes. One of the other things about that, which works against that, however, is the inability to a degree to put on evening performances and let's say lectures and that sort of thing. You know, the Vancouver Institute at UBC, which has been going for decades and decades. I mean, I'll go up there, no problem. But coming back up to SFU on top of the mountain, equivalent distance, it's just not so attractive. And a lot of people won't come up the mountain in the evenings. The Retirees Association runs into that problem. That's why we were holding our evening meetings here, although our last one was actually held up at the, as they call it, the DAC now, the Alumni Association.
Will university provide some...
Well, that's open market housing, isn't
no,
it?
No, because university, as Len explained it, it's market housing. The idea of having... any significant number of students living there is
so you're not going to end up with, I think you called it a student ghetto. Kind of student
there,
neighborhood.
There are some possibilities in terms of faculty. I know a number of faculty people who are happy living up there since the school was built.
Okay. Yes.
Would either of
in
you?
In fact, they kind of will say softly, it's like a private school paid for by the taxpayers. Because you've got all these, multilingual, kids of PhDs and so on. Yes. So university, as far as I can tell, is doing pretty well in terms of attracting a certain type of faculty member, but it's by no means
would I think?
A large number. I mean, who would want, honestly, who would want to live on top of Burnaby Mountain?
Well, that was my question. Would you want to live on top of Burnaby Mountain? No.
Well, there are
and
some
why
of the
not?
Staff who have bought into it because they have no commute. They just go straight to their jobs and then back home again. And that's that includes the university president.
And why would you not want to live on the top of Burnaby Mountain?
The weather's different. You're a long way from, well, you're not so far from, you know, an average restaurant if you want to be out with the children for a spaghetti meal or something. That's fine, but you're still a long way from the action of whatever happens in the Lower Mainland. Even to go to Central Burnaby to functions there, that's at least a half an hour drive, I think.
And the development of a community on Burnaby Mountain has also been greatly set back by the growth of the downtown operations.
Yes, yeah.
Because that's the great safety valve. The university can do all kinds of public things at the Harbor Center or at the Woodward's building.
And know that people will attend.
And people will go.
And you know that people won't attend if you do the same thing on top of the mountain.
So I certainly wouldn't. I knew Jack Blaney, and he had this figured out. That would be somebody worth talking to, if you could find him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if he's around?
Oh yes, he's around.
I'd like to get back.
He briefly served as president of the university, but mainly he was behind the scenes as an administrator.
He was vice president of the downtown.
Yes, and the whole issue of the downtown and Burnaby campuses and how they fit together, he would be probably, next to Warrenville, the most knowledgeable.